meet Bruce Thomas, owner and founder of Bruce A. Thomas Coaching, LLC. Bruce is a seasoned executive, leadership and life coach, masterful trainer, and inspirational speaker. On today's podcast, I talk to Bruce about work-life balance, leadership, and coaching people for greatness. Bruce Thomas, thanks for joining me. I appreciate you coming on and taking time out of your schedule to do this.
No, good afternoon again, Sergio. Again, it's a pleasure to be here. Pleasure to be here with you. And I look forward to just having some great conversation this afternoon. So thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's been some time since I spoke to you and my coach for a bit last year. We talked a bit about time management, and that was what we chose to focus on during our time together. And it's a work in progress for me. I'm still, you know, trying to get it, but I have come to realize that time is really valuable.
Yeah. You hit it right on. It's so valuable. It's so important that we invest in time management as we do in other areas of life and ensuring. And I told you, and I will tell others, you know, when we invest our time, it's important to emphasize having a balanced life. One of my focus is always on life balance and making sure that, and I don't say work-life balance, and we'll talk about that later, but not necessarily work-life balance, but life balance. And part of that life balance is ensuring we manage our time appropriately so that, again, we can have that a solid foundation and a life that's truly balanced and intentional. And again, balance is different for everyone. Time management is different for everyone. There's no right or wrong answer, but to have the balance and the priorities that's right for you. But it comes with understanding exactly what those priorities are and balancing and having the right, again, management, time management skills to focus in those areas. So it remains vital and it's something that's important for all of us to continue to do.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, just hearing you talk about balance in one of our earlier sessions, you gave me this color wheel, and it was a wheel with different categories. I think it included health, friends and family, significant other, personal growth. And you asked me to kind of rate where I was on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of my satisfaction in those areas. How does that tie into this balance that you speak about? Those sort of topics.
No. One of the exercises that I do is a wheel of life exercise, the colorful wheel. It's used in many areas. Many coaches use it. It's a common tool in the coaching industry, but I think it's really effective because it allows one to do some self-reflection and self-awareness and look at their level of satisfaction in particular areas of life. And you might recall the wheel was broken down into several parts. And for those listening, just imagine a circle, a pie, and slicing the pie up into several pieces. And so the pie is broken down to your level of satisfaction with your family and friends, your significant other, your personal growth, your fun and leisure, that vacation time, your ability to relieve stress when you're away, your home environment, your level of satisfaction with your career, your health, your overall health, your physical health, your mental health, your wellness, your overall health and wellness, and your money and your finances. And then you might remember I put in a bonus area, your level of satisfaction with your leadership skills at both work and home in all aspects of life. So it's to rate that your level of satisfaction. And through that exercise and a couple of the different parts in the exercise, it allows individuals to prioritize where they need to spend more time in increasing levels of satisfaction in particular areas of life. Some might say, hey, I need to increase my level of satisfaction in my family and friends, my quality time with family and friends, or having those date times with the significant other, or even my career. Where is it that you need to spend a little bit more time to increase that level of satisfaction? And there's the tie-in between life balance and making sure the life is balanced and taking care of self, that self-leadership, taking care of self and investing in self and having that self-awareness. So they all go hand in hand, and it's vital that we do that, not only as leaders, but just as people.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think about that. And I remember that bonus category, the leadership one. But why is it so important that there be kind of balance in those areas? What if you meet someone, you're starting to coach someone, and they're like, I'm doing pretty well in most of these areas, but I don't think of myself as a leader. So I'm going to rate that a 3. And I don't go to the gym, and but I'm okay with it. I feel fine. I go out.
Right.
Is that necessarily an issue for you as a coach?
Not an issue for me, because it's all about the client. And what is satisfying to one may not be satisfying to another. you know, we could do the life balance exercise. And you're right. Someone may spend an enormous amount of time at work, but they find joy in that. If they find joy in that, and that is a level of balance that they prefer, so be it. Again, there's no right or wrong answers. It's unique to each individual. You know, they might rate their level of satisfaction with health awareness at a 4 or 5 in some areas in the same ballpark. But again, that might not be a priority for them to work at. But I think life balance, it's really an important foundation. One of the things that's important, I used to have a house in San Antonio many, many years ago. And with that house, when I moved to Japan, because I was in the military, we moved to Japan and we were renting out the house for a while. Then we decided to sell the house. And the person we were going to sell the house to, they had it inspected. And we realized when the house was inspected that the foundation was cracked. And it was going to cost $25,000 to repair the foundation. And when you're a sergeant in the military at the time, $25,000 is a lot of money. And quite frankly, even today, $25,000 is a lot of money. Wow. So it was going to cost $25 to repair that foundation. Thank God for Allstate. Thank God for Allstate. Because where we were at in San Antonio, Allstate covered the cost and we were able to get the foundation fixed. But there's a life lesson in that too. The important life lesson is that in our lives, we have to have the right foundation. Mm. If we have cracks in our foundation personally, if we have cracks in our foundation, in our marital relationship, in our foundation of our marriage, if we just have cracks in those foundations, there's going to be problems later on. But when the foundation's right, no matter what storm comes along, no matter what tornado, no matter what strong winds, when the foundation is solid and right, things may crumble and things may get damaged, but the foundation is going to still be in place and other aspects of life can be built upon. So I believe that having that balance in life has to be a foundational principle. And when things get rocky, when tornadoes and storms come in our lives, it's so important for us to have that firm foundation. And everything else, it can be built upon. So I just believe in having a firm foundation for me. And you know, as well as I do, for me, that firm foundation, that life balance have to start with that relationship with Christ as a Christian, as a believer, having that foundation and then living a life that's balanced in perspective so that we can, again, no matter what comes along, we can be resilient in our lives. So that's why I do the life balance exercise. As I coach people and as they have their goals and they have challenges, we can prioritize and move forward when the foundation is right. No cracks.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Just even in watching you, our listeners can't see you, but in watching you, you've always been so passionate about coaching, about leadership, about making people kind of see the greatness that lies in them. Where did that come from? How did you end up doing this sort of work?
No. Thank you for asking that. For those listening, Sergio hit it right on the money. He and I talked about my passion for life and my mission is to groom people, teams for greatness. Because I truly believe the seeds of greatness are within each individual and they just have to be cultivated. And it's really something I learned many years ago. I would say growing up and those type of things, that mother, father, they taught me some great principles, but it was really cultivated in the military. And when I was in the military, I just really found that I just had a passion for and a care for people. When I was in the military, in the Air Force, became a first sergeant. One of the roles of the first sergeant in the Air Force is really taking care of people. And I just felt so much life satisfaction and joy in helping the young airmen and the young folks that were coming along to help them find their path, their way forward, seeing them progress to become chief master sergeants and officers and lieutenants and eventually majors and colonels. But it brought me such great joy to be a part of helping them with their professional development, their personal development, career advice, personal advice, and sowing into them. And so many years later, it just really transcended into other areas of life. I tell people all the time, you can find me on any Saturday morning at Bob Evans with people, especially men at Bob Evans. That's my daughter said, don't say Bob Evans because they'll think you're old. But I didn't know Bob Evans was for old people, but right. But you can find me at Bob Evans just mentoring and having a talk. So it was many years ago that when I was being coached, and telling my coach the joy I found in mentoring and grooming and helping people find their greatness. She said, "It sounds like you would be a good coach," and challenged me, "Have I ever looked at becoming a leadership, life, career, executive coaching?"
Yeah.
And I looked into it and I was very intrigued by it. And I looked into it. And then eventually I submitted for a fairly new program, the Federal Internal Coach Training Program, led by the federal government, and was able to get into that program. And then eventually through the International Coach Federation, be able to get my associate coach certification and be able to move forward as a member of this coaching community. So I enjoy it. Enjoyed, again, starting my coaching practice. I just had a marvelous time just working with people. But I truly believe, as you just said, first and foremost, I believe God has given me a purpose, and that is helping others find their purpose and their goals. And there's those seeds, cultivate those seeds of greatness that He's planted in each individual in whatever endeavor they choose, helping them along the way.
I was on your website and it indicates that you do several different types of coaching, or you coach different types of people or entities or whatever. And that includes executives, I guess, you know, people in management. You do ministry coaching. Is your approach to coaching different depending on who you're coaching necessarily?
It differs only in the individual and what I sense and what they communicate to me and what they desire. Because I want the focus to be on the client and what they desire. There's a lot of awesome coaches and there's a lot of different perspective on, you know, having that niche, having that specialty area. And it's so true, you know, you got different doctors and stuff that may focus on podiatry and another doctor that focuses on optometry. Got it. You know, so there's different niche. I found, mostly because of my military background and my background in government and my various expertise, has allowed me to have flexibility to coach in a couple of different areas. So I am more of a general practitioner in coaching.
Right.
And I am so pleased when I'm coaching executives, such as senior executive in government, for example, those senior executive, the SESs, as we know, and I've coached senior executives as a leader, as a senior leader. I've also coached leaders at mid-level or junior level or up-and-coming leaders. I've coached for groups in the Presidential Management Fellows, that prestigious PMF Fellows group that the OPM sponsors. And then also, again, group coaching, team coaching, ministry coaching. A lot of the coaching that I end up doing, especially with some of my government clients, ends up being more career coaching. But the space that I'm in is to help the client, meet the clients where they're at, meet the person where they're at. There's some coaching I'll stay away from. I've had couples ask me, "Do you do relationship coaching?" I do stay away from, quote, relationship coaching, because it's just something I didn't have a desire to really get into. Then with ministry coaching, you know, coaching pastors or coaching ministry leaders. And that in itself, again, we have different people in ministry areas that have unique challenges and unique circumstances when you're talking about ministry and leading a flock and really helping them to go where they believe God is calling them to go. So I try to just stay flexible in my coaching. Again, some absolutely believe there needs to be a niche, and I respect that. But I find joy in just meeting the client where they're at and attending to their needs and using the coaching strategies, again, at an executive level or just life in general.
Yeah, I'm wondering, it's interesting because you coach people at different levels. And I think most people, you know, when we think of people in leadership, whether it be a senior executive or if it's a pastor, certainly a pastor of a really large church, there's this thinking that these people are at the top, they've made it. They don't really have a need for coaching or for even, you know, much tweaking. I mean, are you ever surprised when you are coaching someone at the highest of levels at the amount of or type of coaching that they require?
That's a great question. I wouldn't say surprised for me, because no matter your level, no matter the level of the individual, as far as whether it's career-wise or just in life, it just depends on what the individual is seeking more in life and what their goals are. Yeah. For example, you know, when I recently was coaching, again, I'm a big believer in confidentiality. So without names or anything like that, but I think I can speak in general. So coaching a senior executive, specifically senior executive in government, and finding some of their challenges as pertaining to time management, as you mentioned, organization management, and how to better themselves as leaders. They have that desire, even at the executive level, how to motivate and inspire their people to willingly follow them as senior executive, not because they have to, but how to inspire people to follow them because they want to follow them. So I found there are, even at that level, as far as senior executives, that they have those challenges. They have goals and aspirations to become better at what they do. So when they have that, again, it's not surprising. Matter of fact, it's nice to hear that even at the senior level, just being real. You know, mm-hmm. I want to improve. I know I need to get better. I want to be in this place 4 years, five nows from me, a year from now. I know I can improve in this area of my skills or in my life.
Yeah.
When what's interesting, especially with senior leaders, business or government, it goes back to reemphasizing the importance of that balance, because they spend so much time, some, not all, spend so much time with work on weekends, on Saturdays, on Sundays, that there is a level of gratification when I see the awareness come back to them that, you know, I do need to remember to spend quality time with my wife, with my family. Senior leaders need that too. Senior executive leaders at all levels need to be reminded of that. I'm doing a presentation tomorrow. Yeah, you may be aware. I'm doing a presentation tomorrow on Dr. Martin Luther King, leadership lessons from Dr. Martin Luther King. Mm. As I was preparing for that lesson, we didn't call it coaching way back during the time of Dr. Martin Luther King, but I'm sure right. Dr. Martin Luther King got some coaching.
Right.
He got some mentoring, got some assistance from people to help him as when he was a young leader, first taking over that and creating or joining that Montgomery Improvement Initiative that helped lead the bus boycott. And then eventually when he took over with the Southern Leadership Conference and again, having to develop his leadership skills. So it's interesting as I read and look at leadership lessons from Dr. Martin Luther King, how I'm sure he got coaching that helped him to develop a strategy, helped him to work with people, helped him to set goals and priorities, not only for himself, but for the many initiatives that he was working as with the common goal and the common focus of the civil rights movement. You know, 1 minute bus boycott and setting some goals, how they're going to execute that. Some then goals with the voting rights and just the different initiatives that were ongoing at the time, how he rallied the people. What are some of the leadership lessons that Dr. Martin Luther King was able, the vision, having a vision statement, having a vision, even though he might not, and he said in this last speech, I might not get there with you. I've been to the mountaintop. I've seen the promised land, but he had a vision. And that's what coaching is about. Helping people to understand, helping leaders, whether leaders at work or leaders in our home as mothers, as fathers, leaders in our church, leaders in our communities, as Boy Scout leaders, Girl Scout leaders, how do we set goals for our lives, our organizations, our projects, initiatives? How do we prioritize those goals? How do we set visions for the areas that we're leading? How do we overcome those challenges that we face to be able to move forward to where we believe we're being called to be? That's what coaching is about, whether, again, at the executive level, at the whatever leadership level. Again, you can be a Boy Scout or Girl Scout leader, but where is it? What are the goals? What's the plan? What are you being called to do? What are your career goals? What are your life goals?
Yeah.
Studying Dr. Martin Luther King and reading about him and preparing a leadership lesson about Dr. Martin Luther King, I think it transcends even to life today.
Yeah.
And so many other great leaders, not just Dr. Martin Luther King, but so many other great leaders from our history.
It's fascinating. Now, did Dr. King ever talk about, in your research, I mean, did he ever talk about the people who were most influential to him? I mean, he probably didn't have, like, you know, any formal coaching, like you said, or they didn't call it coaching. But I'm wondering if just by looking at a leader, can you tell, certainly looking at Dr. King, can you tell for sure that he learned, you know, what he knew from other leaders or other coach types?
One of the names slips me right now because it's in my notes that I have, but I did see that in the leadership lessons of Dr. King. First and foremost, for Dr. King, being a minister, being a man of faith, being a man of Christian faith, but who yet was a man of diversity and inclusion. And so even with his Christian faith and following the faith-based principles of Jesus Christ, that's what Dr. King, you know, first and foremost followed and all that he did. And then interesting that he flew to India to meet Gandhi.
Gandhi, right.
To learn and meet and learn the principles of even more so, you know, about the nonviolence, the importance of the nonviolence approach. Stepping out again, here a man of Christian faith, but again, went to India and was willing to be inclusive of a person of different faith, but yet sitting and talking about learning about, and I'm sure being coached in whatever way about the importance of nonviolence and truly taking that model to a whole new level. And then just in his circle of people and leaders of that time, senior leaders at the time, I mean, the list would probably go on and on of people that mentored him, that he spoke to, that he was able to speak to and learn from. So I think the principles of, and then him not just holding it in for himself, but also sharing and mentoring others, coaching others and passing it on to others. You know, he had a legacy. He just didn't hold it to himself, but boy, and not just in speeches and public appearances, but you can see photos and stuff of the one-on-ones that he was having with people. And that is an indicator of, again, true leadership. Another one that I really admire is Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
And Nelson Mandela, with all that he went through with apartheid, false imprisonment for many, many years, and then the way he came out and galvanized a nation and united a nation.
Yeah. And he was what, in prison for, was it 40 years? How long was he?
I don't remember off the top of my head the number of years, but we do know.
A really long time.
But we know it was a long time that he was in prison until his release. And then eventually was elected president of South Africa. And when he became president of South Africa, and again, this is a coaching moment that I do with a lot of folks and a teaching moment. When he became president of South Africa, a lot of people, a lot of Black South Africans wanted revenge. And he said, no.
Wow.
He was about, how do we unite the nation? How do we unite people? And again, using principles, Christian principles of love, faith, unity, to unite a nation and to make sure that everybody was included. So it's interesting, even for Nelson Mandela, when his cabinet and he took over the in South Africa as president, and I don't know what their equivalent to the White House is, but their presidential manner, he didn't fire everybody and turn it all into a, you know, again, just the Black South Africans. Now right. We're going to take over and all the white South Africans, you're off and gone.
Yeah.
He made sure he included everybody. I mean, he kept his secretary who was white. I mean, he kept, right. You know, he kept the people around him, but yet he brought in some people and was inclusive and made sure there was no. And then, you know, with the rugby team, the South African rugby team. And that's why I love the movie, even Invictus, that shows how he galvanized the rugby team and galvanized the nation around that rugby team. But it was all with a common purpose. And people look at him like, you know, why would you do that? He kept his eye on the common focus as a leader. And that's unity and love. So those leadership skills from both of those individuals, so many others, someone had to sow and cultivate seeds of greatness.
Yeah.
So that when they were at the right moment, at the right time, those great leadership skills, even with their failures and mistakes, but those leadership skills would come out and the legacy be forever known among two great leaders and so many other unknown leaders that were just great over life. So that's why, again, long, long, long answer, but that's why I enjoy coaching, because I think in any interview, you know, you might not be a celebrity public leader or anything like that, but in your circle of people, you'll leave a legacy as a great leader.
Yeah. And you're just even thinking about Mandela, I mean, in spending so many years incarcerated, I'm actually going to be doing a show in a few weeks, and I'm going to be talking to previously incarcerated individuals who, while they were incarcerated for many different things like murder, robbery, whatever, you know, they got their college degrees and they went on to be discharged. And some are working in the area of substance abuse counseling. Others are, you know, working with youth, and they've managed to leave any bitterness they may have experienced behind. And I just find that so fascinating because Mandela could have emerged, and you kind of alluded to this, as bitter and angry, but he came out of that stronger and ready to lead a nation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his focus was on love and unity, forgiveness.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, imagine that's even today in our various aspects of life. If we had hearts of forgiveness, hearts of love, if that resonated throughout just our own country. And we see many examples of it. Many times we focus on the negative and some of the hate that's ongoing, but we have neighbors helping neighbors. We have neighbors loving neighbors. We have a lot of great things happening, even in our nation. And we need to teach that and cultivate that and really truly demonstrate those examples of, again, just love, faith, unity. And it starts with each individual. I believe it, for me, it starts with me as a leader in my home. My girls are all adults now. They're 30, they're 20, 31, 32, 29. I forget their age now. 31, 30. And my youngest one just turned 25. I got three girls. Okay. My youngest one just turned 25 on Saturday. And then the others are 30 and 32. Anyway, it starts there. You know, I had to make sure that, again, as a leap for my wife and I, as leaders in our home, both of us, equal partners, equal leaders in our home, we had to first demonstrate that love and unity with our kids.
Yeah.
And teach our kids and coach our kids. They're all doing very well. They choose their path and they make their decisions. Not every decision they make, I would make or I necessarily agree with, but they're adults just like the rest of us. They do your thing. But they're all doing very well. One works at a college university as associate director in a particular department. One's a school teacher in the local school district, teaches sixth grade. And another one's working on her graduate and is an assistant debate coach at a university and is a music major, working on her graduate in music. Again, I'm proud of all three, doing wonderful things and really trying to inspire them as well to also plant seeds of greatness and help others along the way as they, in their life journey, no matter, even though they're in their 30s and 20s, in their life journey, help somebody else, inspire someone else, pour into someone else, give even more than that was given unto you. Give back, give your time, give your energy, and help others in their skills or in whatever area of life to help others to rise up to succeed. So again, that's a message I hope that many will take because again, I just think it's so important to do.
And now, a word from our sponsor. Stay tuned for more from Bruce Thomas.
What's up, guys? Sergio Gregorio, aka Serge here, and I have an amazing tip for you. Do you have a limited budget but want to start a podcast? Well, then Anchor is for you. The creation tools on this app will let you record and edit your podcast right from your phone, or if you prefer, from your computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast to many platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. With Anchor, you can make money from your podcast, and you don't have to have a certain number of listeners before you do. Yep, you got it. There is no threshold to meet for number of listeners. Anchor gives you everything you need to start a podcast, and it's all in one place. So, what are you waiting for? Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Yeah, so much of being a good leader is being able to be a good person and being able to kind of, you know, manage your emotions and be balanced. Now, I was looking at some of my notes or some of the emails you had sent last year. You did a series called Leadership as a Service, and you talked about becoming a more likable leader while remaining respected. Can you tell me a little bit about why that balance is important?
Oh, yeah. So thank you. I did a video on that. I think I posted one of the video series and did a class on that. You know, I believe, and again, I'm talking over 35 years of leadership at various levels. But one of the things that's important to do is to, as a leader, you can look back and say, I'm a leader, but you turn around, nobody's following you.
Yeah.
Or right. They're following you because they have to follow you because of the structure. especially in the military or in corporate, you know, but in government. But I want people to follow and to walk with me because they want to, not because they have to. Yeah, okay, you get the job and everything, but let's work together and let's have a relationship where you want to follow me.
Yeah.
And I don't think leaders have to be hated.
Right.
So I try to offer some steps and principles of how to be a more likable boss. Now, will everybody like me? Will every doesn't, you know, is that no, is that a guarantee? No, there's, you know, just because of personalities or whatever, you know, it's never guaranteed to have everybody quote like me, but there's going to be times where you make decisions and stuff. They might not like your decisions. They might not like your, some of the things, your preferences, you know, like those Myers-Briggs where we got everybody 16 different preferences. Everybody's different.
Right, right.
But it's important for me to treat people. And I want them to see that no matter what, I'm treating them with respect. You know, when I was in the military, I got to tell you another story.
Yes.
When I was a first,
by the way, what branch of the military were you
in? I was in the Air Force.
You were in the Air Force.
I was in the Air Force.
And so what was your role in the Air Force?
For many years, I was security police. I was law enforcement. And then I transitioned to become a first sergeant and a senior advisor, senior leader in various types of organizations. As a first sergeant, you were responsible for the morale, health, and welfare of everyone in the unit. My unit ranging from 300 to 500 people. So you got your various supervisors and various leaders and managers, but my role working side by side with the commander was to make sure, you know, we had a disciplined unit. We had a happy unit. We had a unit that worked hard, all those things, your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your everything to people. But when it came time to discipline in the military, you know, I had one individual I remember that was, unfortunately, he was driving while intoxicated. And in the military, that's pretty serious, especially back in the late 90s, early 2000s, even today. Driving, drunk driving is not tolerated. And normally there's punishment that comes with that. So typically a person might get an Article 15, what we call an Article 15 in the military. They're going to get some type of either judicial or non-judicial punishment. And in this case, we were going to, the decision the commander and I made, and the final decision for the commander, but I recommend to the commander, that we were going to reduce the person in their pay grade. They were going to lose a stripe as well. So you never want to see that. You never want to do that. But it's something we had to do. It's a disciplinary. And again, you continue to set the tone in the organization. And the individual came in. It was my responsibility to administer and make sure he understood what we're going to do. We're going to administer the Article 15. But Sergio, as we administered Article 15, I didn't yell at him. I didn't demean him. If anything, I needed to find a way to pick up this gentleman to let him know you can bounce back from this. There is punishment, just like we do with our kids, right? There's punishment, but I'm not here to tear you down and keep you down. You're going to take a step back. You're going to be demoted. But now, how are you going to rise above this? How are you going to bounce back? How are we going to get you back? And so he was teary-eyed when he got demoted.
Yeah, it wouldn't be. That's pretty deep.
Believe it or not, in this case, when he was about to leave the office, he gave me a hug.
Whoa. Wow.
He's losing the stripe.
Wow.
Now, to the hardcore military, I'm not about that. Well, that's right. Fine. Whatever everybody's leadership style. But I don't have to do this in a way that diminishes your worth. You hit a roadblock. You're going to be held accountable for your actions. There are consequences for your actions. That's what leaders do. We hold our people accountable, and we ourselves should be held accountable. But again, the way we do it and the way we help people bounce back, you know, this individual bounced back years later. Not only did they earn their stripe back, but many years later, he studied so hard for his promotion that he ended up getting the next stripe after that.
Wow.
Come on, Sergeant Thomas, I just want to thank you so much. You know that, yeah, you did what you had to do, but you helped me.
That's right.
To set a path to come back.
Right.
So when I say being a likable boss, and it starts with treating people, no matter what they did, treating people with respect, trust, and a trust, a certain level of trust, so that, you know, again, they will bounce back from whatever adversity. I just think that's so important. It's a life lesson that I was taught, that a mentor passed to me when I was a young airman in the military. I will say this individual's name because he might be listening. I don't think I spoke to him since 1987 when I last, 1986.
Wow. Okay.
But it was a gentleman. His name was Stephen J. Keen, K-H-E-U-N, Stephen Keen. He was my supervisor when I worked at a military prison at Fort Lewis back in 1984, 85 timeframe, 86 timeframe.
Yeah.
And he taught me, a young two-striper at the time. I left there with, I think, four stripes. But he taught me, this young airman, how to treat people with respect.
Yeah.
What better way to treat somebody with respect than at a military prison? Child molesters, murderers, drug dealers, people that did drugs that are doing time. I said child molesters, sexual things that are doing time. And he taught me, you don't have to talk down to people.
Yeah.
They made a mistake. They did a crime. Maybe some of them have remorse. Maybe some don't. But even in that environment, for the years that I was there, he taught me that I was there as a special duty prison guard. I don't want anybody to think I was in prison. I was on the right. Other side. I was on the right side.
On the right side of the bar.
I was on the right side.
Right.
But he taught me as I worked there, the importance of treating people with respect. He was a likable boss.
Yeah.
He was a wonderful man. He was my supervisor. He held us accountable. He did what he had to do, but he always, always, always treated with respect, built relationships, asked how things were going with the family. Thanksgiving, back in the days when military and stuff, you would have people over for Thanksgiving, single people that didn't have anywhere to go when we would invite them into our homes. He would invite people to his house, things like that. A wonderful gentleman that taught me that important. So I still today credit Stephen J. Keen, Tech Sergeant Stephen J. Keen, as one that taught me, as that planted a seed within me, the importance of treating people with respect. And it's okay to be a likable boss. And if someone doesn't like you, well, I've done all I can. There's decisions you have to make. There's things you got to do. It comes with the territory. I'm going to do my best to treat you with respect, and that we can have a good, and when I say likable, I'm not talking drinking buddies. We got to go out to the bar together. Oh, we got to hang out boss. I try to set those lines, you know, right. we don't have to be the closer to friends and all that. Just be respectful and likable. That's the whole concept.
Yeah. And I would imagine most people, certainly for me and many of my colleagues, I mean, you want to leave a boss better than you came in. You want to leave a better person. You want to look back and say that supervisor, that manager cultivated, they saw in me something that maybe I didn't even see in me, or something I saw in me, but I hadn't developed.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you would be surprised, and our listeners may still be surprised, and it may apply to some folks. I don't know, because I coach a lot of people and I hear some of the things they say about their boss, and it could be two-way street or people I continue to partner with and work with and those type of things. And I see challenges in some other areas of other organizations and those type of things. And now when you talk about, am I ever surprised? It does surprise me sometimes when I hear some of the things going on and why we make helping people and working with people and building relationships with our team so hard.
Yeah.
So I once had a 3-star general. And I won't say his name because he might be listening. And he and I would laugh about this. I told him, he would say, taking care of people is the secret sauce. Mm. And I whispered to him one day, I said, you know, sir, taking care of people is not a secret. It's the main ingredient.
Mm.
Let's not make that a secret. You know, a secret sauce. That's grandma's recipe. You don't want anybody to know about it.
Right.
But his intent was good. So we would laugh about that because his intent was the right place. You know, he would give the town hall, taking care of people is the secret sauce. I'm like, let's not make that a secret. Let's make that a main ingredient that we're willing to share with people and help people, understanding the importance of building relationships and taking care of people.
Yeah.
That's being a likable boss. That's being a respectable boss. So thank you for that question. Great question.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, someone, I think I may have mentioned this on one of the last episodes that I did, that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses, which is a very interesting sort of idea, especially in light of what's going on. You know, a lot of people are leaving their jobs now. We have what they're calling the Great Resignation.
Yes.
People are leaving their jobs in droves, you know, in search of better work-life balance. Because I think what's happening is a lot of people were, well, forced to stay at home, if you could, and work from home. And they got a chance to connect with their spouses, their kids, and they were still able to work. And they saw the value in kind of being, I guess, more connected to what was around them at home. Do you have any thoughts on what a manager could do in this day and age to kind of, I don't know, sweeten the deal and kind of keep people motivated and, I don't know, on the job?
Man, that's another hour. I got a lot of thoughts on that.
Really? I should have asked you that at the top of the
show. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
You know, the 5-minute version.
I'm going to give you the 4 or 5 minute version, because virtual leadership is something we got to adapt to. It's helpful for me to get a better understanding because, again, and it goes back to coaching and hearing things and hearing some of the challenges that people have, not only as a leader, but, you know, or people whose supervisor may not connect with them. I haven't talked to my supervisor in 6 months. What?
Yeah.
People are uncomfortable with, and some people were not comfortable with the change that took place over the last couple of years in moving to a virtual environment. And the pandemic, as many people have probably mentioned already on your podcast, the pandemic has forced the hand.
Yeah.
And it's interesting as I hear people that still talk about the importance of coming together in the office, in the workplace, face-to-face, et cetera. And it is important. There's nothing like face-to-face contact. But, you know, as things evolve in life, the car has evolved. Space exploration has evolved. So many things have, we can't be stuck. And what I call held handcuffed, trapped by our traditions and our culture.
Mm.
We are sometimes trapped by our traditions and the culture. You've heard me say this before. I will tell the listeners. One of the traditions that I hated many years ago was every New Year's Day. When I was a kid, you started off every New Year's Day having to eat black eyed peas.
Okay.
I hated black eyed peas. Mom, why do we have to have black eyed peas?
Right.
But it was a tradition.
Right.
It was a cultural thing.
Mm-hmm.
For good luck, you got to eat a couple of things of black eyed peas. And Sergio, in 1981, when I came in the military, that's the last time I had black eyed peas.
Are you serious?
I have not
had
it since.
That was a long time ago. Okay.
That was a long, I had to move. I had to move on. I had to not, no. If a black eyed peas works for people, great. Keep eating your black eyed peas, put your brown sugar over, whatever people do with black eyed peas. I don't know. Keep eating your, if it works for you, make it better, put some seasoning on it, make it better.
Right.
But I had to release the handcuff of black eyed being trapped by tradition. In this virtual space that we're in now, we have leaders that are trapped by tradition of having to be face-to-face leadership.
Wow.
And there's got to be a time where, in order to evolve and move forward, we have to not be trapped by past tradition. So I found, with this technology that has evolved, it's not dial-in service anymore. We got all this technology and Zoom and all this kind of stuff. And because of the pandemic, we had to get used to leading virtually. Now, how do you lead virtually? It's the same thing you would do face-to-face. You and I, although the people are listening, but you and I right now are face-to-face eye contact. You said before, if the people could see my body language.
Yeah.
Same thing as leaders. Using the technologies that we have, checking in with people, getting even more so, how goes it? How you're doing? Calling up people, the team that I work with throughout the week. Now, I don't talk to everybody every day, but throughout the week, I'm going to talk to everybody and make sure how you're doing, making sure we're, that open door policy we would have in the building.
Yeah.
They got an open door, open Zoom policy. I got open Zoom policy, open MS Teams policy, you know, whatever the platform we're using, MS Teams, Zoom, and all the other platforms that are out there. Let's have these conversations. Let's have the talks. Let's go over the work plan. Let's go over the object. Let's do everything that we would do face the coffee. What is it? The microwave kitchen conversations. let's continue to have those as well.
We'll just add a little microwave to the Zoom.
A microwave sitting off to the side, calling colleagues that, right. I can't get a hold of something. Call the colleagues on the phone, just by phone or by Zoom. Again, I just believe there's so much capabilities that we have that we can maintain leadership principles with just a little twist.
Yeah.
In this virtual environment. And I think it's important that leaders continue to do that and reach out and connect and lead people, the ability to influence, the ability to manage, to go over having your staff meetings and those type. I've known people, they don't do staff meetings anymore because we're not comfortable. I said, what do you mean? I got 15 people on my MS Teams call. We're having a staff meeting that are spread out in their homes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going over and we're sharing screens and we're having conversations. 1 hour though. We don't exceed 1 hour. Anything beyond that, it's too much. But we're having our meetings and we're having our team meetings. We had our team building exercise a couple of weeks ago, had our virtual Christmas party.
Ooh.
How was
the food?
I have my own food. You got to eat your own food.
Right.
But a team building virtual Christmas party.
Yeah.
We had to do those things. So I think folks need to be creative. Leaders need to be creative. Leaders need to be innovative. I said earlier, who would have thought a leader would have been so innovative that they would have organized a bus boycott in a fairly big southern city, Montgomery, Alabama?
Yeah.
Bus boycott and sustained it and used creative ways to help get people to work. That's creative leadership, innovation. So in today's world, with this people departing their areas, I mean, people are going to do what they're going to do, but we as leaders, we also need to rethink and be creative and innovative in how we lead.
Yeah. And I would imagine and think beyond this idea that, you know, just because people are at home, they're out and about, like really going to Target and not doing their work, just kind of move past that and focus maybe on, you know, motivation and, you know, like you said, creative leadership. Because I would imagine that the individual who works hard in the offices is probably still going to work hard at home, if not harder.
I agree with you. If I sit back and worry about who's working at home and who's at Target, I'm just putting undue stress on myself. Mm. I want to see results. I want to see productivity. I want to trust my people. I want to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
So because of accountability, there's time to, you know, checking, there's things we do, but you got to build trust with people. And I want to find ways to build upon that trust, not try to find ways of mistrust.
Yeah.
I think there's a difference.
There is. Bruce Thomas, thanks for coming on. For people who want to get in touch with you, learn more about you and your coaching, how can they find you?
No, a couple of different ways. Thanks for asking. One, just visit my website at www.bathomascoaching.com. That's www.bathomascoaching.com. And you'll find learn more about me, what I can offer, my workshops that I do, the solutions that I offer. It's all about personal and professional development. You can always connect with me on LinkedIn, just Bruce Thomas and Bruce Thomas Coaching on LinkedIn, or my Facebook page, Bruce Thomas Coaching. It'll pop up in the search. And they can always email me at, again, bathomascoaching@gmail.com. So those are a couple of ways. And I hope people do go to my website. And again, love to talk with people one-on-one if they just want to learn more about me.
Or go to your local Bob Evans and maybe.
And go find me any Saturday morning at 8 o'clock at Bob Evans.
All right,
find me at Bob Evans.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate you coming on.
Sergio, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed this conversation, and God bless you, my friend.
And that's it, the Surge Experience. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe and tune in again next time.